And I'm delighted now to welcome back to the program Miriam Sagan. She is a poet and writer, and her new book is called Seven Places in America, A Poetic Sojourn. She will be reading this coming Tuesday, October 30th at 6 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
It's nice to see you, Mary Charlotte.
It's great to have you back, and I'm so happy that you have yet another new book. Now, this is a book where you go to seven different places and write about them and make what you call, at least in one place, poetic maps of place.
That is true. I started off in the Everglades, where I was kind of overwhelmed by the park, by the national park. It's not a contiguous park. There's three separate sections. And I didn't know what I was doing at first. I just was kind of just outside my own little house and, you know, looking at turkey vultures or slash pines. And then I became obsessed with trying to mark out the boundary of where I was, and pretty soon it was a map.
Well, it's funny when you talk about going to Florida and the Everglades, and it was it a residency, in an artistic residency in a national park?
Yes. There's a very good program, Artists in the Parks, which really is about how artists help us visualize the parks. It was part of the idea of promoting the parks, but it can also run into cliche, you know, the majestic monument rising, the moon over Yosemite or whatever. So I was very lucky that they would take a poet, that they would take a writer, not a visual artist. And I got interested in, am I seeing what they want me to see, or am I seeing what I'm seeing by myself?
Right. Well, when you get there, I have to let people know the very first thing you saw is an orientation of the park where it says what all the poisonous snakes and poisonous plants and mosquitoes and West Nile virus and why you shouldn't touch a caterpillar and when to back away from an alligator.
Yes, if it hisses or comes towards you or you see it at all.
But meanwhile, you do see alligators.
You see alligators, you see crocodiles, you see amazing birds, rare snails, and flowers, orchids. It's sort of a kind of treasure hunt being there.
Would you like to read? I want you to read some poems, and maybe we can read one from, I don't know if we'll get through them all, but one from each section from each of the seven sojourns.
Well, it'll certainly be fun to start. I think I'll read you Snail Villanelle, because that's about trying to find something.
And this is from the Florida.
Yeah, this is from the Everglades section. Snail Villanelle. On the Gumbo Limbo Trail, shining white luminescence, I finally saw the tree snail. Color of mother of pearl, rare as a transit of Venus, on the Gumbo Limbo Trail. World slow-moving shell, out of Cuba, the Ligus, I finally saw the tree snail. These patterns inspire calico shawls, rickrack and zigzag and fuss on the Gumbo Limbo Trail. One moon in the sky, pale spiral, simply its nature to please us. I finally saw the tree snail. Far off, one white sail, as on the sea, the phosphorescence. On the Gumbo Limbo Trail, I finally saw the tree snail.
Miriam Sagan, now this is really as much about form as it is the place that you are.
Or the two are kind of connected.
Right.
Because I would go every day, Mary Charlotte. Like in the, it's a villanelle form, so the lines repeat.
Right.
But my activities were very repetitious because I couldn't find it. I could keep going back. It was like, where? I know there's a snail here somewhere. And finally, I did see it.
One of the things that I found, maybe because I'm from upstate New York, but that I kind of liked about this book is that you're from northern New Jersey, the Hudson River. You are from New Mexico because you've lived here for such a long time. You are from the United States because you have such a broad view, but this kind of like you can take the girl out of New Jersey, but you can't really take the New Jersey out of the girl.
It's very true.
It's here in your poetry and in the way you approach each of these places you go.
I'm glad to hear that. I have to say that it makes me feel secure.
What was the second place that you went?
Second section would be a very interesting art site called The Land, an art site, and it's in mountain air. It's administrated by sculptors who live in Albuquerque, but it's this kind of incubator for art. It's just ordinary scrub, pinyon, and it's 40 acres. It looks like everything in New Mexico, but people have been working it for a long time. It's full of sculptural installations.
Now, was that the place where you went and you said you were afraid the land would be blank?
Yes. And then and I did write about this. I was having a panic attack, and I went to a Sam Peckinpah movie at Site, and I ran into Juliette Myers there, the educator at Site, and I, for some reason, I confessed my problem, and she said, "Darling, nothing is blank."
And that became a line of one of your poems.
Exactly. It was also it was true, which is helpful.
Well, it's something that we certainly understand if we're drawn to the desert, is that in barren places, there's so much richness of a different kind than in the kind of lush, humid areas back east or wherever.
It's true, but it's a little bit of a confrontation with the self, too. A barren landscape, I think. You know, people go out into the desert to find God or the devil, right? It's somewhat uncontrolled. Although forests can be scary, too.
Forests can be very scary.
Yeah.
Especially when you've taken the wrong path and the sun goes down up on the top of the mountain near the ski basin.
Don't do that.
I did that.
You did that. I have a feeling.
In the winter.
Don't do it again.
With a dog with the wrong shoes.
It sounds like its own poem.
So let's hear a section. Let's hear a poem from that section.
I'd like to read you a poem from that section. And the one I'm going to read is called Two Blue Circles, and it's about some attempts at installation on that land and about what other sculptors did there and, in a way, how difficult it is to make a mark on landscape, no matter how you try it. Two Blue Circles. The artist wanted to plant a circle of bluebonnets here, but they wouldn't grow in the desert soil. Instead, he constructed a circle of blue glass. The neighbors were meth addicts, hard characters who yelled and fought. When the screaming started, their children went into the circle of blue glass, stood in the center of a safe place. Another artist also wanted to build a circle on the land. He sent exact specifications by mail, dimensions to be raked into the earth. But this did not create a perfect circle in sod. Rather, it eroded and a gopher dug a hole in the perimeter. Then it rained, and the circle's interior bloomed with flax. The circle was filled with blue flowers. A third circle, drawn in blue chalk, on the sidewalk by me as a girl, washes away in the rain.
Poetry by Miriam Sagan. And I like that one because it there is a kind of both beauty and futility to art itself.
Endless futility. An endless yearning, probably.
Were all the seven sections in the seven places in America, were they all like artistic residencies and places where you went to live for a while and write poetry?
It's a good question, and the answer is no. Basically, there are two national parks, Everglades and Petrified Forest. There are two sculpture gardens, one in upstate New York, and the one that I was just talking about couldn't have been more different. Those two places. One was a residency in a, quote, experimental forest in the Cascades. At first I thought the forest was the experiment, but it turns out that it just means that it's got a state-funded program to look at how things grow. And then two of them were mobile. One of them is the Santa Fe River, which is kind of a line that runs through my life as it runs through the lives of many people here. And the other was a section called Mounds, which was about traipsing all over the Midwest looking for the remnants of the mound-building cultures.
Tell us about that.
Well, I was fascinated by it because, you know, in this part of the world, archaeological ruins are built of stone. I mean, they're like cities. And this is giant earthworks. Cahokia, which was a great city. It's across from where St. Louis is now. It's built out of rammed earth. It's like the Egyptian pyramids, but it's a little bit like contemporary earthworks, like Robert Smithson or Heiser, Roden Crater. It just modifies the surface of the earth. And they're funerary. They're burial mounds, and they're cities.
And are they still there?
So many of them were destroyed by agriculture. But yes, they are still there. And it's people know about them, and they're national historical sites, but
we don't really know about them. I mean, it's not like the pyramids or something.
Totally, and nobody really cares about them. I was obsessed. I was crazy. I would track them into graveyards. I would track them into housing developments, high schools, golf courses.
Were there pictures of them sort of pre-agriculture, pre-development that existed and where you could, that helped you locate them?
No, I had a book. Mostly the pictures are of people destroying them. Like, you know, big guys with bulldozers.
Standing next to this ancient archaeological ruin,
right,
smiling.
Which they're about to flatten so they can grow soybeans, yeah.
And so let's hear a poem from that.
Certainly. I'll read you one that sort of traces some of this investigation, searching for it. Newark Earthworks. Octagon intersects golf course. The mound versus the plow. Tiny wild violets and white cup flowers. Underworld, which is now the soil of Ohio. Curved obsidian knife used only for sacrifice. Harsh glint. Wendy's, McDonald's, Waffle House. Ceremonial road without wheel. Conjoined mounds where today people run their dogs in the grassy quadrant. And the morning stars off playing handball beneath the earth. Newark High School's athletic complex, mound littered with cans, sacrifice of virgins, maybe on prom night, easy to scramble up. Underwater panther who rules a realm of dreams beneath the rippled surface, effigy pipe, smoke hole, yurt, house pole, shamans out of Pan-Siberia.
Another poem by Miriam Sagan from Seven Places in America, A Poetic Sojourn. Was there any place of these various places you went where you felt, oh, I'm home?
No. I'm glad you asked that question. In a way, the trick was to get away from home. The trick was to not be at home. Of course, one of the sections is about Santa Fe, so how unhomey can that be? But I wrote those poems actually locked into the Ramada Inn Express at the airport. And I wanted to get away from that feeling of a center place. It's really, I just wanted it to be a pilgrimage.
And it's interesting because you write at the beginning about, I mean, you have, your daughter is grown. You don't have the same obligations at home. And there is that yearning to get away from your comfort zone.
Exactly. I think either you're already away from your comfort zone, and this kind of journey meets that feeling, but I think it also creates that feeling, as you just said. Yeah.
Were there any particularly uncomfortable moments?
I had some fear of darkness, I would say. I think the worst was definitely in the Cascades, where it was so dark. And it was, at first I didn't realize there was anybody else in the station at night. People were away, the ecologists were off, you know, in the woods. And it was one of those eerie things, like The Shining, because I was in this enormous apartment that had, like for a church or school group, like 8 bedrooms. And so I would have to close the bedrooms at night, and I would have to not look at those doors if I got up in the middle of the night. It was just, it was fine in the daytime. I mean, by the daytime, it just looked like, oh, the camp group is coming, right? But at night, it got a little bit uncanny, yeah.
Did you meet people along the way who influenced your writing?
It's interesting. I was very alone in the Everglades. I don't know why. Maybe because it was my first one, and maybe I really wanted to be alone. Petrified Forest, people couldn't have been nicer. Arizona, I had so much help from museum people, paleontologists, rangers. People were always taking me out, showing me things. They would be, oh, here's the writer, show her the teeth of the giant fish that used to live here. So that was great. And they would check up on me. And I think they were part of, it was a very human part of the process. It was their information and their knowledge about the place.
And so it sort of helped, did it help you decide what you were going to focus on? I mean, the fact that there were paleontologists there who were showing you what they thought was important?
Yeah, totally. I mean, in a situation like that, I was both overwhelmed and starved in terms of input. Right? In Petrified Forest, I'm alone in this little house. I'm the only person in the park. They lock the gate at night. The rangers are on the other side of the lock. And so anything was exciting, right?
Right.
On the other hand, it was stupendously beautiful and totally unfamiliar, so it was almost a, you know, uncanny how much stimulation was coming in. Dawn, dusk, it was all incredibly exciting.
One of the places, I guess it was one of the sculpture places you went, they gave you a room with a drill press but no table.
Right, this was really fun. I loved being in Cazenovia. It's a stone
That's
quarry
in upstate
hill.
New York.
Yeah, upstate New York, Stone Quarry Hill Art Park. They had never had a writer. A lot of this, I don't really explain this in the book, but a lot of this was talking my way in. Like, I'm really a painter, but I paint with words. Or I'm really a sculptor, but I sculpt with words. You know, just trying to get into these places kind of on false premises.
The Jersey girl comes out.
It was true. So I talked my way in to a sculptor's residency. And then, of course, they were incredibly confused that I wasn't a sculptor.
Right.
And they wouldn't give me a table to write on. And they just wanted to help me, you know, install something, but there was nothing to install.
And what happened when you, I mean, I assume that when you're in a residency, at the end they want to see what you've done.
Well, what I did is I made them a guide. I made them a free giveaway like you would have at a trailhead, which has poems about specific places in the park.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Which is really fun, yeah.
So really, I mean, it quite literally became a poetic mapping of that place.
Exactly, exactly. And I did postcards for Petrified Forest, and I did a whole installation in Mountain Air. So there was a lot of physical output.
We're talking to poet Miriam Sagan about her new book, Seven Places in America, A Poetic Sojourn. And we're sort of going out of order, but that's all right. But would you want to read one from the Petrified Forest section?
Absolutely. Rock Shop. On I-40, two-headed dinosaurs sell beer, ice cream, moccasins at the rock shop. Slide glass glitters in piles, swirls of color without crystalline structure. The price of prehistoric teeth on eBay drops when they're reclassified as crocodilian, not dinosaur. The fans want those giant lizards. Tiny glass jars hold desert scenes painted in sand. Blue Mesa, red rock, the view from the bus. Could that be us? And a cactus in a painted pot from somewhere else. Once in the Everglades, I saw a cormorant, smart bird, beat a catfish it had caught, break the invasive species' spine and swallow it, not whole but bit by bit. Learned behavior, hunger that looked like wrath. A tourist took a photograph.
Maybe we could hear one, because I think it's important to hear the New Mexico poems also, and the Santa Fe River in particular.
I'm going to read a haiku sequence that's called Alto Street. I basically walked along the river and just sort of took it from Randall Davies up in the Audubon down to San Ysidro. But Alto Street is really, if you were to draw a line from my house, that's where you'd hit the river.
Now, when you say river...
Yes, I mean the endangered Santa Fe River. But it has, it's riparian, it's got a habitat.
It's got water sometimes?
Sometimes it does. It has other things, too.
Which we will hear.
Spiderweb on the mailbox, still waiting. Half-tamed sparrows, the house cat watches. Bad news from everywhere. What's for supper? Slow stars above my house, year after year. Even the memory has begun to fade, hazy moon. Moonstones wrapped away like a forgotten dream. Midnight loud crickets, still no sound of the key in the lock. Rain catches me, I stay too long gossiping. Sweeping the dust under the rug, she writes a poem.
Miriam Sagan's new book is called Seven Places in America, A Poetic Sojourn. So now that you've done this, are you going to keep traveling? Well, you do this a lot, actually. I mean, I talked to you when you were with your cousin, the photographer,
yes,
Teresa Neptune, and you guys had done road trips together where she was photographing and you were writing poetry.
That's right, and I've done a lot of residency time recently in Wendover, Utah, which is Salt Flats, an abandoned Air Force base. That was courtesy of Center for Land Use Interpretation. And I've got a close to finished book about the four deserts of North America focusing on Great Basin.
Ah, very interesting. So you will come back and grace us with those when they're ready.
I sincerely hope so.
Miriam Sagan, thank you so much for being with us, and we will see you at Collected Works on Tuesday, October 30th at 6 in the evening.
Excellent.
Good. There. Well, thanks for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
And I'd like now to welcome to the program Jonathan Richards. and Robert Knott. Robert Knott will be with us in a moment, speaking of the arts, but right now the two of them are here to talk about War of the Worlds. It's a production by Warehouse 21, Ground Zero, Youth Radio, and Youth Media Project. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's the Orson Welles radio drama from way back when people actually believed. What did they believe?
They believed that the East Coast was being invaded by Martians. And they took to their cars, and the roads were jammed with traffic of panicky people trying to somehow escape, although where you could go was hard to say.
Yeah, to escape from Martians. So you, Jonathan, are acting, and Robert, you're the director.
Yeah, it was Anna Gallegos Reinhardt's idea to put it together for Halloween. We're not recreating the actual broadcast, other than Rod Harrison doing a great intro and outro as Orson Welles, speaking just like him. We used a combination of local professional actors, celebrities like Patty Boucher and Superintendent Joel Boyd, and a lot of young people tied up with Youth Media and Ground Zero. It's going to air right here on KSFR, 7 o'clock on Halloween night.
Nice! So do you think that just maybe a few of us somewhere will really think that Santa Fe is being invaded by Martians? Of course, if they're not listening to this program right now.
We certainly hope so. That is our intention, is to scare the bejesus out of them.
Did you change the words to Santa Fe and Española and all that, Albuquerque?
There was a brief discussion of that, but it would have been very difficult. None of us thought it would play as well if we did that. Initially, it was the idea. Minimal changes. I cut midway through the actual production, which aired on, I believe, the 30th, not the 31st of Halloween, back in 38. We cut midway through it. You know, the announcer did say this is Orson Welles in the Mercury Theater, which was the only indication. There was no commercials when Welles did it. I cut that, and I made other really minimal cuts, small characters that didn't really have much to do. But it's basically loyal to the original, with the exception of it was obviously written for all men. It's obvious in watching stills from the rehearsal and the actual transcript. Mm-hmm. And Patty Boucher, who plays a small role, actually noticed that too. We put three women in the part, so we changed the gender, but otherwise it's faithful. And John knew one of the two. People think Orson Welles wrote it. He did tighten it up a little with his Mercury Theater radio group, but it was written by...
It was written by Howard Koch, who was an old friend of mine. Howard Koch, best known probably to posterity for being one of the three screenwriters on Casablanca.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Along with the Epstein brothers. And Howard wrote it. Apparently, I just found out from Robert that there was another writer, a woman, whose name I had never heard. But
Anne, last name Froeke. She had a number of films at Paramount in the 40s.
Could be freaky, I guess.
Yes. And never made a big hit, but was blacklisted, as was Koch later on in the early 50s with the Communist Scare. But she co-wrote it with him, and then Welles took it and adapted it a bit and played with it.
This is such a great thing that you're actually doing radio theater.
Well, that's the key, though. In 38, even though movies were the popular medium outside of your home, radio was the popular medium in your home. It was your television at the time. Had this been done in 48, people would have gone to their TV screens and seen that it wasn't true.
Right.
I think the timing really was everything, give or take a few years.
But in the 30s, people still gathered around the radio. Even later, in the 50s, when I was growing up, I remember we listened to radio drama all the time. I mean, Sunday night you listen to Gangbusters, and and you would listen to these things and take them very seriously. And on a lot of these shows, they would then say they were crime shows, Gangbusters and things like that. And then they would say that they would come back and give you a description of a escaped criminal who might be in your area. Frankie. You know, has a scar over his left eye, you know, short dark hair, and walks with a limp. But when you went to the Grand Union the next day with your mother, you would be looking out for this guy with the scar over his eye and the
right.
limp.
And that poor limping fellow behind the cash register.
It's funny because Welles was also the voice of the Shadow at the time.
Yes, he was.
For money. This was, Mercury Theater was on CBS, and they were looking for a way to boost ratings because you had a choice to listen to the Mercury Theater or to listen to the what they called the Chase and Sanborn Hour, which was hosted, of all things, by a ventriloquist dummy.
Charlie McCarthy.
Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. How that could work on radio, they were knocking Wells off the ratings, and so they came up with this idea of a really good Halloween scare to try to at least once top them, and apparently they succeeded. There's a great New York Times article I sent you of the event and what panic it stirred. Nobody jumped out of buildings or killed themselves, but there were people that took to the roads, ran to their local churches to pray, called the police. One of the funniest stories is Wells insisted that he would reimburse anyone who was financially put out by the show, and one man got his money back for the money he had saved up. He was just about to go out and buy a pair of shoes, but he had to use that money to quickly go out and get on a train to get out of the city. And Wells cheerfully refunded the amount of the man's shoe money.
And he might have bought a slightly nicer pair of shoes than he had originally planned, I'm guessing.
And it did make Wells's reputation, but do you think it made Howard's?
It did Howard some good. Certainly right after that, he... with the rest of them, went out to Hollywood, and he had a very good career in Hollywood. Howard also, he won an Oscar for his screenplay for Sergeant York, and he had a very successful screen career until The Blacklist came along, of course, and then he had to move to England and write there and write under assumed names like the others did, like Trumbo and...
But do you recall any conversations with him about War of the Worlds, or was it something he didn't really bring up much?
We never really talked about that. We talked about Casablanca. Howard was one of the most elegant gentlemen. He was a real gentleman in a very old school sense. And there's another Howard Koch, a producer, a very well known producer named Howard W. Koch, and I remember who produced things like Towering Inferno. And I was working in the film translation business with an old friend from Woodstock, where Howard lived and where I grew up, Woodstock, New York. And I came up Broadway one day and saw this big poster, you know, billboard for Howard W. Koch presents Towering Inferno. So I came into my boss and friend, Noel, and I said, Noel, I just saw this poster. Howard W. Koch, is that our Howard Koch? And she said, no, they're entirely different, and the difference is very much like the difference between Jesus Christ and Jesus H. Christ.
Oh, my goodness. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, Warehouse 21, Ground Zero, Youth Radio, and Youth Media Project present War of the Worlds. And that is a radio drama by H.G. Wells. And you, what's the role that you play?
I play Professor Pearson, which is the role that Wells played in the production. Wells
introduced it. So can you put on that 1930s voice for us?
I need the script.
I have the script out in my Jeep. I'm not going to run out and get it. Professor, what would you say these explosions on Mars are?
Well, I don't think there's any chance that they're really Martians arriving here in spaceships, but we are looking at all the possibilities, and right after this broadcast, we will head over there to the site of the impact and see what we can find.
Real briefly, and thanks for having us on your show. It airs 7 o'clock Wednesday night. It's been a lot of fun directing people, even who didn't have a lot of acting experience, because they did get into the radio voices. A guy named Gabe Rima does a bomber pilot who goes on a suicide mission. He does him like JFK. It was a choice he made on the spot, and it's great. And one of our guys had some problems reading some of the words, and so he sounds nervous while he's reading, and he's an announcer, so some of it worked out. I haven't heard the final cut yet. It airs 7 o'clock Halloween. If you are home, KSFR, you know the radio station. We think it'll
be a lot
of fun.
Yeah, it's the one you're listening to right now, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, even then she gets at me. And Jonathan's great. It's Matt Sanford's in it, Christina V. Hill, John Dixon, Rod Harrison, Patty Boucher. It's really a great group of people.
Well, I think you should have made it that the Martians are landing near Espanola, somewhere between Espanola
and
Santa Fe.
That was given serious thought, but when you hear the actual script, it would have taken such massive rewriting, and somehow, because the whole final act of the program takes the Professor Pearson character, crossing comes in through the Holland Tunnel and up through Manhattan, and you know,
right.
Lots of description, and then finally sees them inside. There would have been, you know, coming up past Lomas
I-25.
And turning left on turning left on Comanche.
No, you should have had the Martians land on that abandoned mall halfway between Santa Fe and Albuquerque.
You could have had that, or you could have had them land land there, and then he finally tracks them down in the fairgrounds, perhaps.
Yeah, the rodeo, or
We could have gone to Roswell.
Via Linda Mar. Well, anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, our pleasure.
We hope people will tune in 7 o'clock Halloween night.
KSFR. Halloween night. All right, definitely. Appointment radio, as they say. So, transitioning into speaking of the arts.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm back in the saddle again.
Yes, you are. And we plan to have you any number of times that you want to come.
You've been planning to have me for 6 or 7 years, and you never fulfilled that promise. All right, so let's say it's Halloween night.
Wipe that little grin off of your face.
And you're not going to listen to War of the Worlds, which you should, but you want to go see something scary. I got to plug the Phantom of the Opera, the 1925 Lon Chaney version, silent, made by Universal. 7 p.m. at the Lenzic. You got to pay to get in, but they're going to have the Ally Orchestra providing live accompaniment. I believe it's going to be a 35, you know, a regular print and not a DVD. John Bowman has a really nice story in Paso Tiempo today about the history of the making of this film. And it still holds up really well. It's about 80 minutes long, and that's 7 o'clock at the Lenzic, Halloween night. The kids will love it, I suspect. It's an old, creepy silent, and whether it still has the power to shock or not, I cannot say. But
I love movies at the Lenzic.
I do, too. I've seen many there, and I remember seeing Some Like It Hot and North by Northwest and thinking they were just an absolute kick to go see them.
I remember seeing The Big Lebowski and people dressed up like Jesus and things like that.
Meanwhile, a whole different kind of Jesus or Jesus age. A whole different kind of
scare. The guy in the purple bowling jumpsuit.
That's right. At the screen is John Carpenter's 1978 slasher flick, Halloween. And that's running on Tuesday only, Tuesday night. It's a late show, 10 o'clock. It's rated R. And there's a nice piece by Rob DeWalt about that running in today's paper, too. So you could go out the night before Halloween and see Halloween. And you could go out on Halloween and see The Phantom of the Opera, 1925. Read Paso Tiempo for the details.
And can I tell you about the cat of the week?
No, please do. I want to hear. I'm going to do purring in the background because whenever I do that, you get all excited.
The cat of the week this week is called Baba. She is a sweet and playful kitten, but still a bit shy. She's coming along nicely in her foster home and will make a wonderful family pet. She's a beautiful girl with a medium-length coat and brown tabby markings with some white areas. If you would like to adopt Baba or are thinking about adopting any cat, because they've got lots of cats of all ages, please call 505-316-2281. You can go to askfelinesandfriends@yahoo.com or fandfnm.org.
And I bring my own pajamas with me. That's the cat's pajamas.
There you have it,
ladies and gentlemen. Can you do the number again? Because I spoke over it, if you still have it up.
316-2281.
Oh, boy, for that kitty cat, that's going to be cute.
That's a cute cat.
I love the kitties.
Yes.
My dog's now climbing up because it's autumn and just, like, insisting on being in the bed. And he's, like, 80-pound pit bull boxer. And there's, like, no 2 in the morning. Sorry to say, like, I've slept with your dogs as well, which really now sounds weird on the radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, don't.
I once.
He don't mean nothing by it.
No, my apologies. I once had the dog sit for you. That's the story. But, I mean, there's a difference between Milk Honey, Horatio, and the little ones.
Yeah, they all weigh 17 pounds each.
You know, and I've got, Bruiser Brody next to me. And when you try to move him at 2 in the morning and he starts growling in, like, sleepy anger, you're kind of, you're not going to get any very far.
Have you ever heard of dog training?
All right, back to this. There's lots of theater around this weekend. Let's talk about some of it. You can go to Santa Fe High at 7:33 p.m. and see A Midsummer Night's Dream. I wrote about it in yesterday's paper. Arcos Dance, that runs through the weekend. Arcos Dance Company's got a contemporary dance program. I think they're playing over at the Dance Barns on Alto Street. We have a story in today's Paso Tiempo. Take a look-see. Bingo runs through the weekend at the Armory for the Arts, 7 o'clock. Interesting quick side note, a lot of people are bringing their performance times down to 7 or 7:30 p.m. these days, maybe because it's darkness and autumn and all that. But Bingo plays at 7, Arcos at 7:30, Midsummer's at 7:33.
What do you prefer, to go to the theater at 7 or at 8?
In the autumn and winter, like last night I went to see Moon Over Buffalo, I was kind of glad it was at 7:30. At 9:30 I was out. But, in the summer, et cetera, I think an 8 o'clock show is fine. But I've noticed more and more, and it could be a reflection on, frankly, an older audience that wants to get in and out sooner. But nonetheless, Bingo, Meow Wolf, Santa Fe Performing Arts, variety show of experimental performance art in one act, 7 o'clock tonight and tomorrow. Moon Over Buffalo continues at Santa Fe Playhouse. Hilarious hijinks and hamming galore. I saw it last night. It's fast-paced. There's some really fun, wonderful performers in it.
I would like to say that Robert Knott told me that the amount of hamming and hijinks was greater than anything that he's ever done.
That's correct.
On this show or in his own theater.
The hijinks were even more hijinkish than any hijinks I've hijinked.
I find that impossible to believe.
No. The antics were antic-driven well beyond my own antics. The buffoonery outbounded any buffoonery I myself have perpetrated.
Ever indulged in. Okay.
Yes. Theater Work has a new show, and I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Ellie Mosmary.
Thank you. 7:30 also, James A. Little. It's a drama about a grandmother, a mom, and a little girl. So there is a lot of theater this weekend. Here's what's really interesting. Tonight at 5 o'clock, get this, out at the Chavez Community Center.
Yeah.
Halloween on Ice, 5 to 9.
All right.
Skating party with prizes, candy, spooky music, special effects. You got to pay to get in, but that includes a skate rental. So take the kids out and do Halloween on Ice. I was thinking, I don't know if I've ever seen this like in a zombie movie, but like let's say you were on skates in the ice rink when the zombies attacked. You'd have some chance because you'd be on your skates, and they'd be slipping. But at the same time, it'd be scary because if you fell, they'd get you. So that needs to be in a movie sometime.
Well, I will keep that in mind when I write my next blockbuster. Hey, the 11th Annual Arts...
I miss you.
Elder...
Even when you do that stuff to me, I don't care.
The 11th Annual El Dorado Arts and Crafts Show is happening this weekend. It's for the second year in a row. The El Dorado artists are bringing their art to Santa Fe. 58 artists will show a variety of work, paintings, jewelry, ceramics, glass, photography, sculpture, all sorts of things, at the St. John's United Methodist Church at 1200 Old Pecos Trail on Cordova here in Santa Fe. This is what the Santa Fe Baking Company is on. It's Friday from 3 to 7, that's today, and tomorrow from 9 to 5. More information, eldoart.org, eldoart.org.
Listen, what do you know about this character, Zeno the Gideon Ken Experimentalist?
Say more.
7:30 tonight, Great Hall, Peterson Student Center, St. John's. Apparently, mathematician William Goldblum Block is this character, and he's going to be talking. I have no idea what it's about, but the very title makes me want to go see it.
I thought you were talking about Prince Zeno.
No, it's Z-E-N-O.
Okay.
So if you want something that's erudite, go on up there. 984-6070, 7:30 in Great Hall. It's Zeno, the get-in-kin experimentalist.
Ah, as in Zeno's paradox.
Ah, that's
my it. St. John's is coming back to me.
Oh, those guys, that's right. I did a little St. John's too, and I don't think they ever want me coming back to them. Okay. Santa Fe Flea Market's at the Downs still. 8 to 3 on Saturday and Sunday. Farmer's Market's going strong. You can do Argentine Tango Milonga, 8 to midnight on Saturday night at Alameda Street at the Dance Station. You got to pay to get in, 982-3926. Do they teach you, or do they just, like, is it tango lessons, or do you just...
You tell me.
Well, you're always at the dance station doing this stuff. I'm usually getting booked into county.
The last potluck of 2012. Wow, it's noisy in here at the Santa Fe Baking Company this morning.
It's not even me.
The last potluck of 2012 is about seed saving from Richard Bernard and energy efficiency from Craig O'Hare from the county, and that's Tuesday the 30th of October at 6:30 at Whole Foods Community Room on St. Francis. It's it says behind the store. And if you want more information on that, go to homegrownnewmexico.org. So it's classes and potluck on Tuesday.
Now let's say it's Thursday. It's the day after Halloween. No zombies got you. You come out from under your bed or from your closet where you were hiding all night. At least that's where I usually hide. Although I do have that pit bull boxer to keep people away. Usually I watch Abbott Costello meets
Frankenstein.
That would
work.
It would?
That pit bull boxer to keep you away, yes.
But I'm going to listen to War of the Worlds at 7 o'clock. But it's Thursday. What do you do? Well, I got things to tell you. Larry Rasmussen speaks on the wonder of water at 1 o'clock Thursday afternoon at St. John's Methodist Church on Pecos Trail. You got to pay to get in. Meanwhile, Sandra Cisneros and Esther Hernandez, the author and illustrator of a new book called Have You Seen a Marie, they're going to be talking and signing their book at 6 o'clock at Collected Works. This is Thursday. And Trent Zelazny, Zelazny, he's going to be reading from and signing copies of the very intriguingly titled Too Late to Call Texas, 6 o'clock Thursday at Op City Books on Baca Street.
Opposite.
Yeah, that's right. It's opposite the other place on the other side of the road. And there's a story in Paso Tiempo on page 16.
Excellent.
Yeah, I know. I got by that one, didn't I? And I like to talk about the School for Advanced Research because they always have these great lectures. Listen to this one. Gathering Dust, Producing Therapeutic Natures in Post-Socialist Siberia.
Yes. Isn't that the woman who studies Tibetan medicine in Siberia?
Tatiana Chudakova?
Yeah.
I think so. Noon. That's noon on Wednesday. That's Halloween day during the day.
Excellent.
School for the Arts has got a play opening Thursday night by Elizabeth Weissman. It's an adaptation of an opera called Sisonia, Sisonia. 9th to 12th graders are playing it at 7 o'clock at Warehouse, good little theater. Call 988-1234 for tickets on that. And again, that's Thursday night. Hey, how are we doing for time?
It is 8:50.
Yikes.
And Rhythm Tonic, Smokin' Bocce Taiko, and the Marimba Wizards of Jaca are coming together for one night of amazing percussive performance at the Santa Fe Sol. And that is tomorrow at 7 o'clock, Santa Fe Sol Stage and Grill, Sol of Santa Fe, S-O-L of Santa Fe.com.
It's time to start getting out there and dance again. The weekend's here. It's a cold autumn night. You feel like heating up. Boy, is there a lot of music to go to. So listen to this.
I'm listening.
Tonight at the Cowgirl, Felix y los Gatos.
Felix y los Gatos.
Felix y los Gatos. 8:30, small cover. El Farol has dance band Controlled Burn at 9, small cover. El Farol's on Canyon Road. I can walk there and stagger home without hurting anybody. Evangelos has classic rock band The Jakes at 9 o'clock.
Say more about the staggering.
It's only when I'm smart enough not to drink and drive. That's why I go to places close to my house. People don't usually recognize me, and even if they do, under that state, I never recognize them. La Fiesta Lounge has Nosotros. That band will make you want to dance. 8 o'clock, no cover. And Second Street at the Rail Yard has Open Range, the Bluegrass Duo, 6 to 9, no cover. And Vanessa has Soul Static, which is a pretty good R&B soul group. I used to dance to them sometimes. 9 o'clock, you got a call over there for a cover charge. And that's important because I'm going to give that place a little grief because I used to go there and they would just stick a cover charge on your bill without telling you there was a cover charge. So I'm really glad they're saying call for cover.
Sunday, October 28th at 11 o'clock, uh-huh. Journey Santa Fe presents State Senator Peter Wirth at Collected Works Bookstore.
This is important.
He's a first-term state senator elected during the 2008 general election, and he was a representative before that, and he will discuss issues of the upcoming election with veteran KSFR radio host David Bacon.
It's going to be great. 11 o'clock on
Sunday.
Yeah, so
they have Journey Santa Fe is doing a really great series of events on Sunday morning. Every single one sounds great.
It does, and Collected Works, by the way, has always and continues to really host these great readings of all different kinds and poetry performances, etc.
Shout out to Collected Works and to our independent bookstores.
Yay! I forgot to mention on Sunday that Jules Work Follies, local talent showcase series, Whatever You Do, Part 7, Smile in Spite of It. It's going to be stand-up comedy and other antics. 6 o'clock at the Lucky Bean Cafe in Montezuma in San Busco Center. You got to pay a few bucks at the door. 310-9997. And did we talk about the Rail Yard Artisans Market?
Go for it.
On Sunday, 8 to 1, live music. 10 to 4 is electric acoustic harpist, Work Barron. Jerry Carthy will be over there. Santa Fe Farmers Market Pavilion, basically, on Paseo de Peralta. Go check it out Sunday. Should be nice weather. They are saying it's going to be cold this weekend and then warm up a little. But so bundle up. I already got my leather jacket out.
I got an email about a new gallery, Hills Gallery Remix, Then and Now, grand opening, and that's today from 5 to 7 at 217 Galisteo in Santa Fe.
Let me rattle off some openings, gallery openings. Those guys don't get enough stuff. CCA Spectre Rips Project has Stitch Thought. It's an installation of felt living room furnishings by Tamara Wilson. You mentioned Hills Gallery Remix. I'll mention the Shiprock Santa Fe at 53 Old Santa Fe Trail. Second floor has work by designer Hikori Nakamura, reception 5 to 7. Verve Gallery on Marcy Street has Steven Strom, a retrospective 5 to 7. That's on Marcy Street. You can find the story in Paso Tiempo today. Zane Bennett over on Guadalupe Street. Zane Bennett Contemporary Art has West East Los Angeles, New York, which is paintings by David Kapp, as well as some glass sculpture by Michael Petri called Joshua D's Wall and Recent Works. That's 5 to 7 p.m. Most of the receptions on Friday nights are 5 o'clock. Canyon Road in the autumn is a nice place to walk up, and I'm sure a few others are having openings as well.
And I got a note that Jan McDonald, is it Jan or Jan? Trumpet and Dave Anderson are playing at El Maison on Friday, that's tonight, the 26th of October, from the Great American Songbook. They'll be there 7:30 to 10:30, no cover charge, but reservations recommended. Chispa at El Maison.
That's pretty cool.
That sounds like fun.
Oh, there they are, the three. Oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. I overlooked them. Jerry Carthy is over at the Hilton at El Cañon. That's a great little place to have a drink in the autumn and winter because they always have a fire going. If you can get close to the fire, it's nice.
And they've got some good tapas there.
Yes. That's what else
As
is going
does
on?
La Boca, which might be my favorite place on the planet.
Really?
And that other night, that other place that they opened around, kind of around the corner from La Boca, called La Taberna.
There's a bunch of Halloween parties and celebrations, by the way. Some of the elementary schools are having fiestas over the weekend. I know Carlos Gilbert is, Chaparral. I think tonight Gonzalez over on Alameda's having one. There's going to be free trick-or-treating, safe trick-or-treating at SFCC on Halloween night, and a haunted house set up for people. The Palace Restaurant, if you're a little older and want a drink or two, they're having cats and ghosts at the Palace.
Do we have a problem with unsafe trick-or-treating?
Well, I do, but you probably don't.
I mean, when we were little, we went out at night. We waited until dark. None of this trick-or-treating in the light, and none of this trick-or-treating with your parents.
What are you talking about?
When you were little, didn't you just go out in your costume and go around the neighborhood and collect loot?
I was too afraid to do that until I was like 22. Then I started doing that.
Ah, well, that would explain a great deal.
I would trick-or-treat. You were right. At those days, it got dark at 6 o'clock, right? So, like, you had an early dinner, and then you ran out. You had a... What'd you use? I had a pillowcase.
I had a bag, like a grocery bag, like what you would now call a tote bag. Okay. Maybe it was just... I don't know what it was.
And did you come home with, like, a lot of bubble gum and Hershey stuff? And
oh, yeah.
And did your mom sift through it and say, you can't have this because it's got a razor blade in it?
Nope.
Huh, I see.
We just ate everything.
Yeah, it was fun in those days. I don't even think kids trick-or-treat in neighborhoods anymore, do they?
Yeah, no, they do. In fact, I've been told that I should get candy. But in my neighborhood, we don't get a lot of people.
Okay. Well, that's why
some neighborhoods, you get a ton of people. But and you have to get a lot of... You have to go buy those mega bags in
your
supermarket.
But I do miss those days. I mean, now they have to go to the mall or to the community college or to KSFR or something, you know?
For trick-or-treating?
Yeah. That's
very
how it is.
Very odd.
Well, that's it. What about Day of the Dead? Anything happening that night?
I'm sure there's a lot happening that night.
No, go ahead and mention it.
I don't know.
Well, you don't, huh?
I thought you were doing Speaking of the Arts today.
Oh, I am? Well, let me see here. Let's see what else
I got something from the New Mexico School for the Arts.
I just mentioned that. Sisonia?
Okay, you did. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
They're also doing a live dance environmental show up on the Cross of the Martyrs on November 3rd. It sounds really interesting, by the way.
Excellent.
Incorporating the environment. Yeah. That's Elizabeth Weissman's thing. Sisonia, 7 o'clock, yeah. Warehouse 21, 7 o'clock. Okay, what else? Let's say you want to go down to Madrid. Guess what's happening?
What, a Halloween event?
Well, I'm not so sure about that. That reminds me. Benchwarmers, do you want to participate?
Yes.
Santa Fe Playhouse is looking for scripts, 15 minutes long, February. Never done before. Deadline October 29th. So that's
so
like
I'll write
Monday.
One the day after tomorrow.
That's right. The Penn Literary Awards are taking submissions. Awards at penn.org. Is that it? I don't even get to do
Dean special, Martin. Oh, a special afternoon honoring Donald Woodman, My Life in Photography, a Career Overview at the New Mexico History Museum on Sunday, October 28th.
Good.
And they don't tell me what time.
War of the Worlds, Halloween night, 7 o'clock, KSFR.
All right.
Good seeing you.
All right, good seeing you, too. Yeah, you can sing. We
Next
have time.
Next time, can I touch you? Like, just reach over and pat your knee or something?
Yeah, go ahead. Try me.
No, I guess not.
You know, are you going to sing?
Mary
go ahead.
Charlotte
He's
loves
singing.
You.
He's singing.
You're nobody till Mary Charlotte cares. You might be a king, you might be a prince, but it don't matter much. Because you never done felt anything till you get a Mary Charlotte touch. No,